did the new music for my podcast. Ah. Don't let me interrupt you. What game is it?
Under the Knife.
Oh, it's the operating one.
Mm-hmm. Or Trauma Center.
Yeah. You guys aren't multiplayer on it, are you?
No, you're not.
Okay. I don't know how that would work.
Yeah.
I guess I'll hand you a scalpel.
You can have two surgeons at once.
It's the Yoga Cave Holiday Report, and we're talking with Clinton R. Nixon and Emily Carebaugh.
Hello.
Hi.
And hopefully the jungle speed tournaments that surround us here in the lobby of the Embassy Suites don't completely overwhelm the audio.
I think we'll be fine.
So you guys both have new games out at
yes.
the show.
Yes.
There's Shooting the Moon that you have, Emily, which is kind of, you know, developing the themes and mechanics of Breaking the Ice.
Yep, it's a sequel.
Yeah. And you have The Prince's Kingdom, Clinton,
yes.
which is kind of a remix of Dogs in the Vineyard.
It is, in many ways, including in the rules and the setting and the, yes.
Yeah.
The first time I even thought about it, I articulated Dogs in the Vineyard for kids, which was such a terrifying thought that I had to kind of see it through.
Nice.
It turns out to be a great adaptation, actually.
Yeah, I'm really happy with it.
I think it's great. I think the rules writing in The Prince's Kingdom is especially just great because you seem to like have that in mind, and it's like you kind of really do tell people what to do, which not very many role-playing books accomplish.
Thank you. All this stuff comes with practice. It's cool. All the people that I know from the Forge and all these people that make their games, each year the games improve. Every year, I mean, there's been innovative, interesting games out there, but we're getting really, really quality games now. People are, I'm not necessarily proud of the early things I wrote back in the day. And over time, you just get better at learning, how to convey rules. So
yeah.
I'm proud of it, though. Yeah. Thank you.
But the theme that I want to approach in talking with all the India or the story game designers this year is like, where are we planting our flag 10 years down the line? Like, where do we want it to go? And the fact that you guys have both kind of drawn on previous works of your own and other people's to do your big new releases here is my exciting segue here. Because, it's just things cross-pollinating and building on themselves, and that can lead to a lot of great things. It can also lead to a little bit of
inbreeding,
a little closing of the gene pool, but which doesn't seem to be happening so far, because there's also,
I think, we're just developing the techniques that we've learned about over the last 5-10 years and fine-tuning them and polishing them. And I think that the innovation comes in spurts and in leaps. And so right now, I think we're digesting a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
So.
I would agree. There's a, how do I want to put this? Actually, you're going to want to edit that, because I agree with Emily.
But at the same time, there keeps being innovation. Like, just playing games this time around, I found myself going, oh my god, my games are so overwritten. Which, last year, were 10 times simpler than most every other game I had played. And, I mean, part of it is there are a lot of more short-form games being written, partly because of contests like the Ronnies and interesting stuff. And also because we're allowing ourselves to let go of everything that's not essential. And that can mean that you let go of everything that, we've seen this pendulum swing before.
Yeah.
Rules light systems, whereas in the 90s or whatever. But it's interesting to see how much we can let go of and then come back to everything.
Right.
Yeah. And for myself, honestly, the next game I'm writing, I want to write a long porn game. I'm really looking forward to that.
And this is, well, we should talk a little bit about the game that you're at work on.
Yes.
Which is
Alien First Contact.
I'm trying to remember. Sign In Stranger, is that it?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that one, it's about humans who call... become colonists on an alien planet and they're the first ones to go there. And the players and the characters are in the same position. They don't know anything about the new environment, and it's developed over time. So for me, that's what I'm interested in, collaborative development. So it's a really interesting challenge to take these characters who are doing the same thing as the players and give a system that allows everyone to be learning and assigning meaning at the same time. So I like seeing that as open-ended instead of having a specific arc to just see where it goes.
That's super interesting. I didn't know you were working on that.
Yay. I'm testing it tomorrow. Come.
Awesome. I'm taking the somewhat opposite. It's funny, we're all opposite roads right now. I went from big to small, with the Chev yesterday being sort of your traditional sized RPG with a setting and actually something you don't see a lot in any games, which is the setting and all and fantasy game.
Vincent calls them setting agnostic. I love that.
Yes. And I am moving towards smaller, lighter, weirder games. The Princess Kingdom was a big move for me, and that was I was so inspired by Dogs in the Vineyard. I played it over and over and over and thought, this is the sort of game I wish I'd written. And then, of course, my next game is I throw away dice and your traditional GM roles and all that crazy hippie stuff that everyone else has been doing for years that I just haven't gotten around to yet. So.
Right. This makes me think of is I want to talk about gaming and intimacy, because we have the woman who does the dating games here, and we also have just talked about Dogs in the Vineyard, which is like, I so have been wanting to play Dogs in the Vineyard for 6 months now, but finding players for this kind of game is that much more difficult, because when you're addressing any kind of serious theme, that's a kind of intimacy that you can't necessarily instantly be comfortable with just J Random Gamer that you posted on Craigslist for,
Totally. Yeah, I very much agree. Now, it's funny, I would propose to you that Dogs in the Vineyard can be played without that level of intimacy. I've done it.
It probably can.
And it turns violent, but that's okay. It's still fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does turn into a more harsh judgment rather than an examination of our values.
Yeah.
And it's cool that it's that flexible. It can be played both ways. When I first met, but one of the earliest times I played with some of the guys in my current gaming group, played with Jason Morningstar and other people, we had a game of Dogs in the Vineyard where they fought a werefox that killed them all. And it was awesome and bloody. And and now when we play games, it's different. So yes.
Yeah.
The level of intimacy is, I mean, I think it's something that game groups get. I do not exaggerate one bit to say that I love the guys in my gaming group in a very non... I can't believe I even felt like I had to say that. We hug a lot.
All right.
Seriously. All right. Which sounds just crazy, but man, we have really good games, so I'm not complaining. We really enjoy ourselves. But yeah, it's a level of knowing each other, comfortable with each other, being comfortable showing each other. And where you get that isn't necessarily in games. You have to have that beforehand. We get it because one ritual we do is each week one of us makes dinner for the other two. So we all eat dinner together. We talk about our week. We talk about what's going on in our personal lives. We complain about our bosses and significant others sometimes in a very nice way. We get it all out. And then we, getting all that out, we sit down and we have some really close to the heart games. So.
You're friends, and that allows you to have more intimate games.
Exactly. Emily knows that I'm very, very wordy now. I've been up all day and very hyper.
May I address that too?
Certainly.
I wanted to just say that something that can be done in any game and is done often in all gaming is just distancing. The violence, I think, is a distancing technique. And also making things more fantastic or unreal. I think that's what a lot of games have, is they take us out of our normal daily life.
Right.
And that's something that breaking the ice is hard for a lot of people, because you're not setting it necessarily in some other world. You're not being some other person. You're being people who could be you, which does take a certain amount of openness.
Yeah. Or even if you are setting it in some other world, that more of the gameplay prescribes things that are going to be more relevant to the average gamer's life than punching someone in the neck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
when I first started writing Breaking the Ice, like, my interest was in the deep, dark, you know, let's go there kind of approach. And I found that it was more appealing to other people and also more fun to approach it from a comedy angle. Because then, if people want to go there, if they develop that with each other, you know, through this game or some other game, that's great, that's fine. But you don't have to, like, jump right in with everybody, you know? So, the comedy.
I want to... This is maybe just an absurd question, but I'm kind of obsessed with it. I want people to start making, like, big absurd plans for, like, where we're taking this, you know? Because, I mean, I don't want to lay all my cards on the table because I have extremely vague commercial ambitions at some point down the line. But, I mean, somewhere in this constellation that has story games in it is the future of popular entertainment. And I am convinced of that. And just, you know, I want people to ratchet up their ambitions a little bit, even if just as an exercise.
Ooh.
You know?
You're going to have a hard time with me on that one, Mike.
No?
Well, one of my hopes, I don't really necessarily have an idea about where we're going to end up, but my hopes is that we will be able to segue out of such genre ruts, basically. You know, to be able to move into more different kinds of story, like fiction and literature, just like comics did, you know, with graphic novels. You know, 20, 30 years ago, people saw it as being three-color comics with cute superheroes and whatever. And now there's a much larger spectrum of topics that are dealt with. You know, autobiography, issues of, you know, people living in different countries. It's a literary form.
Yeah.
That people are viewing it as a literary form. And the same can, and hopefully, may be true of games as well. I mean, and that doesn't mean that there won't be lots and lots of, like, adventure, fun, fiction, literature, you know, whatever that is, that I feel like is what most of gaming is right now. But it'd be nice to be able to have a little bit more breadth in the stories. And Clinton, we were just talking about both independent computer gamers.
Oh, yes.
And the overlap with role-playing games. So I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Well, just that I think that what they're trying to do is what we are doing, but with computers, which is much harder. And you know, I mean, the way I've read a lot of what's going on in independent computer game design and this sort of focus on story, and I know this is something that Mike loves, so his face is lighting up for everyone out there listening. As for me and my ambition, I said that you're going to have a hard time with me on that, and I'll tell you what. I mean, I'm in this for a hobby. Like, I am very... I said that from the beginning, and I hold it up. I love coming here, and I love making money at Gen Con, but I don't want it to turn to a job. So, I mean, I will always continue to do this, but I really enjoy the games that I'm playing.
Yeah.
I know no other way to put it. I love playing a good game of... the Shadow Hero Roach is really freaky. I love playing the game of Dogs in the Vineyard. I love playing Shadow Hero Roach, too. But I was trying to think of something that bears a lot of resemblance to traditional role-playing games, yet does something a little new. I don't know.
Well, I'm not even necessarily talking about commercial ambition. You know, I'm talking, you know, artistic ambition.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you my artistic ambition, but you kind of know it already.
I mean, you're expressing it in what you're doing, but I mean...
Yeah. Well, then that is my goal. I find talking about this stuff is really hard, and it tends to set people off more than anyone ever intends to. It hurts me how much when people talk about this, it can set them off the internet or whatever. I just kind of try and do it, but I will tell you, I mean, my next game is very, very ambitious in that I don't want it to be about, I want the game to explicitly say up front, you know, what it's about, what it's going to do, and for it to be a true tragedy. But for it to be a collaborative game in which, you know, people are really working together to make the story, instead of where they think about it in a different way. I'm not going to call it a role-playing game. I'm not going to purport that it's a role-playing game. People just argue with me online and says this isn't a role-playing game. I'm going to nod and say sure. I don't even know exactly how to articulate it. I'm obviously getting a lot from doing improv that's informing it, and improvised play, just like Ron Edwards has come up with Story Now for his sort of game type that he has. I think mine would be called Improvised Play. I'm kind of playing on the word play, obviously, because you're acting something out, but you're playing and you're improvising, and we'll see. I want to make it accessible to anyone. That's the point.
I think that's going to be really exciting is when people start thinking about, you know, folding dramaturgy into this. Because, I mean, collaborative play and pervasive play, and, you know, there's a couple of people in the community kind of talking about making big distributed games that can kind of be crazy, like a LARP. But the thing is, once you grow a community to a certain point, a portion of that community is going to be audience.
Right.
You know, they're going to be kind of lurkers. And I think the way to deal with that is to design it in. You know? And you can... There's some games that, like Jonathan Maltin's games, they're very dramatic already. You could essentially do them, you know, as improv games in front of an audience.
Definitely. And it's interesting, the difference that we are seeing in some of these story games and in, say, traditional role-playing games, I see it very much echoed, actually, within the improv world between Chicago-style improv and improv elsewhere. Keith Johnstone, who's a British improviser, he does improvised plays. He will have a name of a play, there's a theme to it, there's a sort of generalized act structure, and they'll get up on stage and improvise the play night after night. And it's really interesting. His writing about it is very much worth reading. Now, I was in a class recently, an improv class, and not that I'm a great improviser, I've only taken a few classes, but we're doing Chicago-style improv, and our teacher wants us to get staying away from plot. He says, you know, you don't want to get focused on plot. You get up on stage, and no one can sit there and, you know, improvise a play for an hour. And I'm thinking, actually, we kind of do that every week, and other people in the world are doing it, and those two, I really think we're going to see some melding. I will not be surprised to see 1 year at Gen Con, say 10 years from now. You want my 10 year from now prediction? On Friday night, instead of going to see the Gen Con band and whatnot, you'll have a group of people to get together on stage and do a role playing game, and people will watch because it will be interesting. They'll walk around. It will be very much like watching a play, but with awesome swords and lasers and rock out. I think you could possibly see that.
All right. How about you, Emily? It's 10 years. Outlandish vision of the future.
10 years from now, I think we're going to see a lot of different people role-playing who maybe don't call it role-playing, but are doing a lot of different kinds of things that are doing, like, what Clinton's describing sounds like different children of RPG going out into the world.
Yeah. Right on. All right. Well, we can wrap it up there, I guess.
Okay.
Clinton and Emily, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate it.
For submitting to this treatment.
Awesome.
And I will shut off the thing.